Good morning, everybody, and welcome back. Before we get into today's chapter, I just want to take a quick second to wish a big happy 40th birthday to Daniel Hansen, known to some of you as D.K. Hansen, author of Jaron Hartwood, Quadrant of Balance. This was the first audiobook that I was able to record for retail sale. I'm currently working on the sequel, actually, Omen of Destruction, and that book is about 90% of the way through, so we should be seeing it released very soon. Okay, on to today's chapter. Starless Night, Part 2. Prayers Unanswered. Not since the day I walked out of Mensa Baranzen have I been so torn about a pending decision. I sat near the entrance of a cave, looking out at the mountains before me, with a tunnel leading to the Underdark at my back. This was the moment in which I had believed my adventure would begin. When I had set out from Mithril Hall, I had given little thought to the part of my journey that would take me to this cave, taking for granted that the trip would be uneventful. Then I had glimpsed Eliphane, the maiden I had saved more than 3 decades before, when she had been just a frightened child. I wanted to go to her again, to speak with her and help her overcome the trauma of that terrible drow raid. I wanted to run out of that cave and catch up with Tirithiel and ride beside the elf back to the Moonwood, but I could not ignore the issues that had brought me to this place. I had known from the outset that visiting Montelio's Grove, the place of so many fond memories, would prove an emotional, even spiritual experience. He had been my first surface friend, my mentor, the one who had guided me to my Leaky. I can never express the joy I felt in learning that Montelio's Grove was under the protective eye of a unicorn. A unicorn! I have seen a unicorn, the symbol of my goddess, the pinnacle of natural perfection. I might well be the first of my race to ever have touched the soft mane and muscled neck of such a beast, the first to encounter a unicorn in friendship. It is a rare pleasure to glimpse the signs that a unicorn has been about, and rarer still to ever gaze at one. Few in the realms can say that they have ever been near a unicorn. Fewer still have ever touched one. I have. Was it a sign from my goddess? In good faith, I had to believe that it was, that my Leaky had reached out to me in a tangible and thrilling way. But what did it mean? I rarely pray. I prefer to speak to my goddess through my daily actions and through my honest emotions. I need not gloss over what has occurred with pretty words, twisting them to show myself most favorably. If my Leaky is with me, then she knows the truth, knows how I act and how I feel. I prayed that night in the cave entrance, though. I prayed for guidance, for something that would indicate the significance of the unicorn's appearance. The unicorn allowed me to touch it. It accepted me, and that is the highest honor a ranger can ask. But what was the implication of that honor? Was my Leaky telling me that here, on the surface, I was, and would continue to be, accepted, and that I should not leave this place? Or was the unicorn's appearance to show me the goddess's approval of my choice to return to Mensa Baranzen? Or was the unicorn my Leaky's special way of saying, farewell? That last thought haunted me all through the night. For the first time since I had set out from Mithril Hall, I began to consider what I, Driz Duarden, had to lose. I thought of my friends, Montelio and Wulfgar, who had passed on from this world, and thought of those others I would likely never see again. A host of questions assailed me. Would Brunner ever get over the loss of his adopted son, and would Catterby overcome her own grief? Would the enchanted sparkle, the sheer love of life, ever return to her blue eyes? Would I ever again prop my weary head against Gwenhyver's muscled flank? More than ever, I wanted to run from the cave home to Mithril Hall and stand beside my friends, to see them through their grief, to guide them and listen to them and simply embrace them. Again, I could not ignore the issues that had brought me to this cave. I could go back to Mithril Hall, but so could my dark kin. I did not blame myself for Wulfgar's death. I could not have known that the dark elves would come. And now, I could not deny my understanding of the awful ways and continuing hunger of Loth. If the drow returned and extinguished that cherished light in Canterbury's eyes, then Drizzt Do'Urden would die 1,000 horrible deaths. I prayed all that night, but found no divine guidance. In the end, as always, I came to realize that I had to follow what I knew in my heart was the right course, had to trust that what was in my heart was in accord with my Leaky's will. I left the fire blazing at the entrance of that cave. I needed to see its light to gain courage from it for as many steps as possible as I walked into the tunnel, as I walked into darkness. Drizzt Do'Urden. Chapter 7. Unfinished Business. Bergenyon Benray hung upside down from the huge cavern's roof, securely strapped to the saddle of his lizard mount. It had taken the young warrior some time to get used to this position, but as commander of the Benray Lizard Riders, he spent many hours watching the city from this high vantage point. A movement to the side, behind a cluster of stalactites, put Bergenyon on the alert. He lowered his 10-foot-long death lance with one hand. The other held the lizard's bridle while resting on the hilt of his ready hand crossbow. "I am the son of House Benray," he said aloud, figuring that to be enough of a threat to defeat any possible foul play. He glanced around looking for support and moved his free hand to his belt pouch and his signal speculum, a shielded metal strip heated on one side and used to communicate with creatures using infravision. Dozens of other House Benray lizard riders were about and would come rushing to Bergenyon's call. "I am the son of House Benray," he said again. The youngest Benray relaxed almost immediately when his older brother Dantrag emerged from behind the stalactites, riding an even larger subterranean lizard. Curious indeed did the elder Benray look with his ponytail hanging straight down from the top of his upside-down head. "As am I," Dantrag replied, skittering his sticky-footed mount beside Bergenyon's. "What are you doing up here?" Bergenyon asked. "And how did you appropriate the mount without my permission?" Dantrag scoffed at the question. "Appropriate," he replied. "I am the weapons master of House Benray. I took the lizard and needed no permission from Bergenyon." The younger Benray stared with red glowing eyes, but said nothing more. "You forget who trained you, my brother," Dantrag remarked quietly. The statement was true. Bergenyon would never forget, could never forget, that Dantrag had been his mentor. "Are you prepared to face the likes of Drizzt Do'Urden again?" The blunt question nearly sent Bergenyon from his mount. "It would seem a possibility, since we are to travel to Mithril Hall," Dantrag added coolly. Bergenyon blew a long and low sigh, thoroughly flustered. He and Drizzt had been classmates at Melee Match There, the Academy's school of fighters. Bergenyon, trained by Dantrag, had gone there fully expecting to be the finest fighter in this class. Drizzt Do'Urden, the renegade, the traitor, had beaten him for that honor every year. Bergenyon had done well at the Academy, by every standard, except Dantrag's. "Are you prepared for him?" Dantrag pressed, his tone growing more serious and angry. "No," Bergenyon glowered at his brother, sitting astride the hanging lizard, a cocky grin on his handsome face. Dantrag had forced the answer for a reason, Bergenyon knew. Dantrag wanted to make certain that Bergenyon knew his place as a spectator if they should happen to encounter the rogue Do'Urden together. And Bergenyon knew, too, why his brother wanted the first try at Drizzt. Drizzt had been trained by Zach Nefane, Dantrag's principal rival, the one weapons master in Menza Baranzan whose fighting skills were more highly regarded than those of Dantrag. By all accounts, Drizzt had become at least Zach Nefane's equal, and if Dantrag could defeat Drizzt, then he might at least come out from under Zach Nefane's considerable shadow.
"You have fought us both," Dantrag said slyly. "Do tell me, dear brother, who is the better?"
Bergenyon couldn't possibly answer that question. He hadn't fought against, or even beside, Drizzt Do'Urden for more than 30 years. "Drizzt would cut you down," he said anyway, just to peeve his upstart sibling.
Dantrag's hand flashed faster than Bourguignon could follow. The weapons master sent his wickedly sharp sword across the top strap of Bourguignon's saddle, easily cutting the binding, though it was enchanted for strength. Dantrag's second hand came across equally fast, slipping the bridle from the lizard's mouthpiece as Bourguignon plummeted from his seat. The younger brother turned upright as he fell. He looked into that area of innate magic common to all drow, and stronger in drow nobles. Soon the descent had ceased, countered by a levitation spell that had Bourguignon, Deathland still in hand, slowly rising back up to meet his laughing brother. Matron Benray would kill you if she knew that you had embarrassed me so in front of the common soldiers. Bourguignon's hand flashed in the silent code. Better to have your pride cut than your throat. Dantrag's hands flashed in reply, and the older Benray walked his mount away, back around the stalactites. Beside the lizard again, Bourguignon worked to retie the top strap and fasten together the bridle. He had claimed Driz to be the better fighter, but in considering what Dantrag had just done to him, a perfectly aimed two-hit attack before he could even begin to retaliate, the younger Benray doubted his claim. Driz Duarden, he decided, would be the one to pity if and when the two fighters faced off. The thought pleased young Bourguignon. Since his days in the academy, he had lived in Driz's shadow, much as Dantrag had lived in Zach Nefane's. If Dantrag defeated Driz, then the brothers Benray would be proven the stronger brothers, and Bourguignon's reputation would rise simply because of his standing as Dantrag's protege. Bourguignon liked the thought, liked that he stood to gain without having to stand toe-to-toe against that devilish purple-eyed Duarden again. Perhaps the fight would come to an even more promising conclusion, Bourguignon dared to hope. Perhaps Dantrag would kill Drizzt, and then, weary and probably wounded, Dantrag would fall easy prey to Bourguignon's sword. Bourguignon's reputation, as well as his position, would rise further, for he would be the logical choice to replace his dead brother in the coveted position as weapons master. The young Benray rolled over in midair to find his place on the repaired saddle, smiling evilly at the possibilities afforded him in this upcoming journey to Mithril Hall. "Jurlis," the drow whispered grimly. "Jurlis Horlbar?" Jarlaxle asked, and the mercenary leader leaned against the rough wall of the stalagmite pillar to consider the startling news. Jurlis Horlbar was a matron mother, one of the two high priestesses presiding over House Horlbar, the 12th house of Menzoberranzan. Here she lay, dead, under a pile of rubble, her tentacle rod ruined and buried beside her. "It is good we followed him," the soldier's flicking fingers remarked, more to placate the mercenary leader than to make any pertinent revelations. Of course it was good that Jarlaxle had ordered that one followed. He was dangerous, incredibly dangerous, but seeing a matron mother, a high priestess of the Spider Queen laying dead, sliced by a wicked sword, the mercenary had to wonder if he, too, had underestimated. "We can report it and absolve ourselves of responsibility," another of Bragan the Earth's dark band signaled. At first, that notion struck Jarlaxle as sound advice. The matron mother's body would be found, and there would be a serious inquiry by House Horlbar, if by no one else. Guilt by association was a real thing in Menzoberranzan, especially for such a serious crime, and Jarlaxle wanted no part of a covert war with the 12th House, not now, with so many other important events brewing. Then Jarlaxle let the circumstances lead him down another avenue of possibility. As unfortunate as this event seemed, the mercenary might still turn it into a profit. There was at least one wild card in this game that Matron Benray played, an unknown factor that could take the impending chaos to new levels of glory. "Bury her once more," the mercenary signaled, "deeper under the pile, but not completely. I want the body found, but not for a while." His hard boots making not a sound, his ample jewelry quiet, the mercenary leader started from the alley. "Are we to rendezvous?" one soldier flashed to him. Jarlaxle shook his head and continued on, out of the remote alley. He knew where to find the one who had killed Jurlis Horlbar, and knew, too, that he could use this information against him, perhaps to heighten his slavish loyalty to Bragan the Earth, or perhaps for other reasons. Jarlaxle had to play the whole thing very carefully, he knew.
he had to walk a narrow line between intrigue and warfare. None in the city could do that better.
Utha Gentle will be prominent in the days to come.
Dantrag Benray cringed when the thought drifted into his mind. He understood its source and its subtle meaning. He and the weapons master of House Barrison Delarmgo, House Benray's chief rival, were considered the two greatest fighters in the city.
Matron Benray will use his skills.
The next telepathic message warned. Dantrag drew out his surface-stolen sword and looked at it. It flared a thin red line of light along its impossibly sharp edge, and the two rubies set in the eyes of its demon-sculpted pommel flared with inner life. Dantrag's hand clasped the pommel and warmed as Kazadhia, Cutter, continued its communication.
He is strong and will fare well in the raids on Mithril Hall. He lusts for the blood of the young Duarden. The legacy of Zaknafane as greatly as you do. Perhaps even more.
Dantrag sneered at that last remark, thrown in only because Kazadhia wanted him on the edge of anger. The sword considered Dantrag its partner, not its master, and knew that it could better manipulate Dantrag if he was angry. After many decades wielding Kazadhia, Dantrag, too, knew all of this, and he forced himself to keep calm.
None desire Driz Duarden's death more than I, Dantrag assured the doubting sword. And Matron Benray will see to it that I, not Uthan Gentel, have the opportunity to slay the renegade. Matron Benray would not want the honors that would undoubtedly accompany such a feat to be granted to a warrior of the Second House.
The sword's red line flared again in intensity and reflected in Dantrag's amber eyes.
Kill Utha Gentel, and her task will become easier,
Kazadhia reasoned. Dantrag laughed aloud at the notion, and Kazadhia's fiendish eyes flared again.
Kill him? Dantrag echoed. Kill one that Matron Benray has deemed important for the mission ahead? She would flay the skin from my bones.
But you could kill him?
Dantrag laughed again, for the question was simply to mock him, to urge him on to the fight that Kazadhia had desired for so very long. The sword was proud, at least as proud as either Dantrag or Utha Gentel, and it wanted desperately to be in the hands of the indisputably finest weapons master of Mensa Baranzan, whichever of the two that might be.
You must pray that I could, Dantrag replied, turning the tables on the impetuous sword. Utha Gentel favors his trident and no sword. If he proved the victor, then Kazadhia might end up in the scabbard of a lesser fighter.
He would wield me.
Dantrag slid the sword away, thinking the preposterous claim not even worth answering. Also tired of the useless banter, Kazadhia went silent, brooding. The sword had opened some concerns for Dantrag. He knew the importance of this upcoming assault. If he could strike down the young Duarden, then all glory would be his. But if Utha Gentel got there first, then Dantrag would be considered second best in the city, a rank he could never shake unless he found and killed Utha Gentel. His mother would not be pleased by such events, Dantrag knew. Dantrag's life had been miserable when Zaknafane Duarden had been alive, with Matron Benray constantly urging him to find and slay the legendary weapons master. This time, Matron Benray probably wouldn't even allow him that option. With Bourguignon coming into excellence as a fighter, Matron Benray might simply sacrifice Dantrag and turn the coveted position of weapons master over to her younger son. If she could claim that the move was made because Bourguignon was the better fighter, that would again spread doubt among the populace as to which house had the finest weapons master. The solution was simple. Dantrag had to get drizzed.